after Trump's blitz of executive orders, which have ruffled feathers both at home and abroad.
The president is expected to speak about reshaping the government, his vision for the economy, and ending the war in Ukraine. And he's promised the speech will be big and has said he will, quote, tell it like it is. All right, as we wait for President Trump to begin speaking, we're going to bring in Nick Harper now. He joins us live from Washington, D.C. Nick, Mr. Trump's time in office so far, it could be characterized as, you know, turbulent or triumphant, depending on who you ask. I want to ask you, what do you think his accounting is going to look like tonight? You know, what do you think he will highlight as his biggest accomplishments?
Well, I think he has the opportunity over what could potentially be a more than 1 hour speech to highlight a tremendous amount of accomplishments, because it has been a whirlwind 6 weeks since he re-entered the Oval Office. The White House are saying that this is must-see TV. Potentially 32 million Americans will be tuning in. That's how many tuned in this time last year to watch Joe Biden's final State of the Union. And we have in the last few minutes got excerpts from the White House of things that Donald Trump will be saying and highlighting. I just want to read you a couple of them. He says that these last 6 weeks have been nothing but swift and unrelenting action to usher in the greatest and most successful era in the history of our country. We've accomplished more in 43 days than most administrations accomplished in 4 or 8 years, and we're only just getting started. During the course of these 6 weeks, there's been about 100 executive orders, about 400 executive actions that have radically changed not just the United States, but the way that it interacts with allies and adversaries around the world. And he will want to speak about those tonight, the dismantling of the federal government, the fact that he has created this Department of Government Efficiency that's managed to, he thinks, cut wastage and save vast amounts of money for the American taxpayers. He has worked to try and bring peace deals to the Middle East and Ukraine. But one thing that he probably also needs to speak about is the cost of living, because he campaigned on his promise to bring down the cost of living, to reduce inflation. But with these new tariffs that have upended global markets over the last few days, there is a real fear that American consumers are going to bear the brunt of that. They will see prices go up. They will see inflation go up. We're told that in this speech tonight, he's going to break it down into four themes, and the economy will dominate that second theme, and during which he's undoubtedly going to try and spell out how he is making things more affordable for Americans out there.
Nick, do you think President Trump is going to dare Congress to oppose him? We know that he's already, if you like, ignored, several policies which Congress is responsible for. Or do you think he's going to ask lawmakers to kind of back him and work with him?
Well, yeah, he's in an interesting position in the fact that so far he has been in go-it-alone mode. He has put out all of those executive orders that he's able to do without Congress's approval. But there is a whole range of legislative actions that he will need Congress's help with. Now, that's made easier for him because both houses, the House of Representatives and the Senate, are controlled by the Republicans. But things like huge tax cuts that he wants renewed, he'll need to work to get that achieved with Congress. We need to avoid a government shutdown. The deadline for that is Friday week. And this legislative agenda will need the houses to be able to work together. He will undoubtedly, therefore, try and appeal to Congress, in particular the Republicans, to help him with that vast agenda that he's really trying to push through. But of course, there is already concern from some Republicans. They're worried about some of his actions and perhaps some of his overreach that we've seen in the last 6 weeks as a result of that go-it-alone approach.
As you were speaking there, Nick, we are looking at live pictures from Washington, D.C. The Trump cabinet has arrived. We moments ago saw Marco Rubio, the U.S. Secretary of State, and they're assembling just ahead of President Donald Trump's entry into the chamber of the House of Representatives. Now, as we wait, I want to talk to you about boycotts, you know, calls by some to boycott today's address, to find some sort of mechanism to counter President Trump tonight. Can we expect any surprises, Nick?
Well, I think it's likely to be very small in nature. Democrats have been urging lawmakers not to make a big fuss, not to heckle the president. We know that there will be some lawmakers who are not turning up, including Jerry Connolly. He's a representative from Northern Virginia. He represents a whole heap of government workers who have been fired, and he says that he is doing this in solidarity with them. We're also likely to see some support from Democrat lawmakers when it comes to Ukraine. I mean, we can already see that there are some people there wearing those yellow and blue ties, the colours of the Ukrainian flag. There are some people wearing ribbons and pins, really trying to show that as an opportunity that they are supporting Ukraine and are very concerned about the movements we've seen from Donald Trump, including just in the last 24 hours of suspending all military support to the country.
Certainly looks like a full house in the House. Nick, Ukraine and tariffs expected to feature in his speech today. Do you expect him to soften his tone with Zelensky, who has assured the U.S. that he wants peace and a quick end to the war?
There is certainly that possibility. We didn't see a full-out apology from President Zelensky early, but he did speak about Friday's explosive Oval Office meeting. He said it was regrettable, doing what he could in his messaging over the last 48 hours or so to really show his thanks to the United States, to say he's still ready to work with them on a deal, that rare earths deal. And we have seen some softening on the US side as well. It'll be very closely watched, the exact words of the president tonight, the type of messaging that he gives, especially when it comes to NATO allies, who are very worried about the moves that we've seen from Donald Trump, the reduction of aid, the fact that he's ruling out NATO membership for Ukraine in any peace deal. There will be some concern, and therefore those remarks, I think, will be watched very closely. But overall, I would imagine some softening of the language that we see from Donald Trump tonight when it comes to President Zelensky in particular.
Understood. We are also seeing reaction, you know, globally, you know, from financial markets in reaction to the tariffs and counter-tariffs, if you like. Now, this is a huge risk for Donald Trump. Do you have any idea why he's taking such a big gamble?
Well, so often with the US president, it's all about trying to pressure another country, an adversary, an ally, to try and make them a deal that is more favourable to the US president. I think we've very much seen that over the last 6 weeks. The big problem, though, from Wall Street's point of view, from global markets' point of view, is they have reacted very badly to this latest round of tariffs. 25% on Canada, 25% on Mexico, an extra 10% on China. All three countries either retaliating today or promising retaliation over the next few days. We've also seen the US Commerce Secretary suggesting that we could see a rollback on some of those tariffs, saying that that could potentially come as early as Wednesday. He said it's not going to be a pause, but he is trying to work with the Canadians and the Mexicans to try and find some middle ground. There's no suggestion that there'll be a change of approach when it comes to those tariffs against China, but we could see a slight difference being made in the next 24 hours, some sort of reduction in tariffs. Potentially, that would be good for global markets. And if Donald Trump's trying to sell his agenda to the American people who are fearful about an increase in the cost of living, I'm sure that will be welcome news as well.
It is about 9:09 p.m. in Washington, D.C. And Nick, as you said off the top, you know, the White House said tonight is going to be must-see TV. Let's talk about the guests. Both Republicans and Democrats have invited guests who will be in attendance tonight. Any notable names on that list? Can you tell us how these people were chosen?
Yeah, certainly. We've already seen some of them come in during the course of the last hour or so to the chamber. It's very much about wanting to highlight either an achievement or an agenda. And that's for both the Republicans and the Democrats. So from the Democratic point of view, they say that they've invited people who've been fired by the Department of Government Efficiency, who've lost their jobs in recent weeks, including two disabled veterans, one who was fired from her position at the Veterans Affairs Office within the last week. Also a National Park Service ranger who has lost his job, making it harder for Americans and international tourists to visit those national parks. On the flip side, the Republicans, Donald Trump and his wife Melania, are trying to highlight some of the achievements of the last few weeks. One of Donald Trump's key invitees is Mark Fogel. He's the teacher that was serving a 14-year prison term in Russia. until last month when we saw that prisoner exchange. Donald Trump will be wanting to celebrate that as a win. I'm sure he'll mention Mark Fogel by name, an opportunity for him to stand up in the audience and be recognized. But also, we'll also have the widow and the daughters of the man who was killed at the rally in Butler, Pennsylvania last July, where Donald Trump narrowly missed that bullet in that assassination attempt. That firefighter died. His widow and children will be there. And there'll also be the mother and sister of a student called Laken Riley. She was murdered by an illegal immigrant. And of course, Donald Trump has been trying to highlight that migrant crime, as he refers to it, about illegal immigrants coming across the border and creating havoc, causing murder across the United States. We've even seen a law change over the last 6 weeks as a result of that, in the way that illegal immigrants can be detained and quickly deported from the United States. So very much trying to highlight from the Republican point of view what they feel they've achieved over the last 6 weeks. The Democrats in opposition to the last 6 weeks, trying to point out how they feel the Republicans have upended the country, and especially highlighting those mass firings of a whole variety of federal workers in multiple agencies and departments really right across the United States.
But once again, we are awaiting the arrival of President Trump, you know, for his speech before a joint session of Congress. Not quite a State of the Union address. He's only been on the job for 6 weeks, but widely expected to tout his accomplishments, you know, in the opening, very opening phase of his tenure as the 47th president of the United States.
Yeah, and Trump's speech is happening on the same day that Canada and China retaliated with tariffs on American goods. Mexico saying they will follow suit on Sunday. Nick, we're looking at pictures of the chamber as we await President Trump. There's one guest I want to focus on for a moment, and that is Elon Musk. He was center stage at Trump's first cabinet meeting last week, and reportedly he helped to craft the speech we're about to hear tonight. How prominently do you think this relationship is going to be on display tonight?
Yeah, it'll be a difficult task for the president, a real balancing act, if you will, because while Elon Musk has been central to much of what Donald Trump has achieved, Donald Trump wants to be the man of the moment in tonight's speech, the man in the spotlight there at the front of the room. We have seen pictures of Elon Musk. He's dressed very differently to normal, wearing a suit this evening. He's not in his trademark black MAGA cap and jeans and T-shirt, as we saw him in that cabinet meeting, but also in an Oval Office meeting where he dominated for about 30, 40 minutes, taking multiple questions from reporters while Donald Trump sat at his desk. Elon Musk also had one of his children in the office as well. And I think it'll be a difficult one for Donald Trump to really try and work out how much he focuses on Elon Musk. Well, this is Donald Trump first time as he walks into the chamber here, first time speaking to a joint session of Congress in his second term. Of course, no stranger to giving this type of speech. Much of the pomp and circumstance is well known to him. It's something that he has had to do before. But very much coming in this evening to a hero's welcome, the Republicans who are happy for him to be returning. And here he comes into the chamber this evening.
Thank you.
So a rapturous welcome for President Trump. No sign of any dissent from Democrats at this point, not that we can see or hear. In fact, I perhaps saw some polite applause from Democrats earlier on as well. Once again, President Trump arriving to address a joint session of Congress. Only 6 weeks in office, widely expected to tout his achievements, talk about issues like Ukraine and the use of tariffs as well. He's gone alone. He's done it alone, if you like, so far, but widely expected, but may appeal to lawmakers because he does need their help on a number of fronts, in particular to fund his tax cuts and also to get more money for, issues which are close to his heart, like the crackdown on illegal immigrants and border control.
Yeah, reports initially said that President Trump would begin speaking at around 9:10 p.m. in Washington, D.C. It's now 9:16 p.m. You can see President Trump is in no rush to make his way to the front of the chamber. He is a man familiar with TV, and he is taking this opportunity during prime time to make his entrance. Nick, if we could chat a bit before President Trump begins speaking. I want to talk to you about polls right now in America. The latest Reuters Ipsos poll shows President Trump getting poor marks for how he's handling the cost of living issue, foreign policy as well, though he did score fairly positively on immigration. Okay, I'll pause the question now. We will wait momentarily as President Trump begins to address this joint session of Congress.
Thank you very much. It's a great honor. Thank you very much. Speaker Johnson, Vice President Vance, the First Lady of the United States, members of the United States Congress, thank you very much. And to my fellow citizens, America is back. Six weeks ago, I stood beneath the dome of this Capitol and proclaimed the dawn of the golden age of America. From that moment on, it has been nothing but swift and unrelenting action to usher in the greatest and most successful era in the history of our country. We have accomplished more in 43 days than most administrations accomplished in 4 years or 8 years, and we are just getting started. I return to this chamber tonight to report that America's momentum is back, our spirit is back, our pride is back, our confidence is back, and the American dream is surging bigger and better than ever before. The American dream is unstoppable, and our country is on the verge of a comeback the likes of which the world has never witnessed and perhaps will never witness again. There's never been anything like it. The presidential election of November 5th was a mandate like has not been seen in many decades. We won all seven swing states, giving us an electoral college victory of 312 votes. We won the popular vote by big numbers and won counties in our country. In our country, 2,700 to 525, on a map that reads almost completely red for Republican. Now, for the first time in modern history, more Americans believe that our country is headed in the right direction than the wrong direction. In fact, it's an astonishing record. 27-point swing, the most ever. Likewise, small business optimism saw its single largest one-month gain ever recorded, a 41-point jump.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House and to cease any further disruptions. That's your warning. Members are engaging in willful and continuing breach of decorum, and the chair is prepared to direct the Sergeant-at-Arms to restore order to the joint session. Mr. Green, take your seat. Take your seat, sir. Take your seat. Finding that members continue to engage in willful and concerted disruption of proper decorum, the chair now directs the Sergeant-at-Arms to restore order. Remove this gentleman from the chamber. Thank you. Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House. Mr. President, you continue.
Thank you. Over the past 6 weeks, I have signed nearly 100 executive orders and taken more than 400 executive actions, a record, to restore common sense, safety, optimism, and wealth all across our wonderful land. The people elected me to do the job, and I'm doing it. In fact, it has been stated by many that the first month of our presidency, it's our presidency, is the most successful in the history of our nation. By many. And what makes it even more impressive is that, do you know who number two is? George Washington. How about that? I don't know about that list, but we'll take it. Within hours of taking the oath of office, I declared a national emergency on our southern border, and I deployed the U.S. military and Border Patrol to repel the invasion of our country. And what a job they've done. As a result, illegal border crossings last month were by far the lowest ever recorded, ever. They heard my words and they chose not to come. Much easier that way. In comparison, under Joe Biden, the worst president in American history, there were hundreds of thousands of illegal crossings a month, and virtually all of them, including murderers, drug dealers, gang members, and people from mental institutions and insane asylums, were released into our country. Who would want to do that? This is my fifth such speech to Congress. And once again, I look at the Democrats in front of me, and I realize there is absolutely nothing I can say to make them happy or to make them stand or smile or applaud. Nothing I can do. I could find a cure to the most devastating disease, a disease that would wipe out entire nations, or announce the answers to the greatest economy in history, or the stoppage of crime to the lowest levels ever recorded. And these people sitting right here will not clap, will not stand, and certainly will not cheer for these astronomical achievements. They won't do it, no matter what. Five times I've been up here. It's very sad, and it just shouldn't be this way. So, Democrats sitting before me, for just this one night, why not join us in celebrating so many incredible wins for America? For the good of our nation, let's work together and let's truly make America great again. Every day, my administration is fighting to deliver the change America needs to bring a future that America deserves. And we're doing it. This is a time for big dreams and bold action. Upon taking office, I imposed an immediate freeze on all federal hiring, a freeze on all new federal regulations, and a freeze on all foreign aid. I terminated the ridiculous Green New scam. I withdrew from the unfair Paris Climate Accord, which was costing us trillions of dollars that other countries were not paying. I withdrew from the corrupt World Health Organization. And I also withdrew from the anti-American UN Human Rights Council. We ended all of Biden's environmental restrictions that were making our country far less safe and totally unaffordable. And importantly, we ended the last administration's insane electric vehicle mandate, saving our auto workers and companies from economic destruction. To unshackle our economy, I have directed that for every one new regulation, 10 old regulations must be eliminated, just like I did in my very successful first term. And in that first term, we set records on ending unnecessary rules and regulations like no other president had done before. We ordered all federal workers to return to the office. They will either show up for work in person or be removed from their job. And we have ended weaponized government where, as an example, a sitting president is allowed to viciously prosecute his political opponent, like me. How did that work out? Not too good. Not too good. And I have stopped all government censorship and brought back free speech in America. It's back. And 2 days ago, I signed an order making English the official language of the United States of America. I renamed the Gulf of Mexico the Gulf of America. Likewise, I renamed for a great president, William McKinley, Mount McKinley again. Beautiful Alaska. I love Alaska. We've ended the tyranny of so-called diversity, equity, and inclusion policies all across the entire federal government and indeed the private sector and our military. And our country will be woke no longer. We believe that whether you are a doctor, an accountant, a lawyer, or an air traffic controller, you should be hired and promoted based on skill and competence, not race or gender. Very important. You should be hired based on merit. And the Supreme Court, in a brave and very powerful decision, has allowed us to do so. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. We have removed the poison of critical race theory from our public schools, and I signed an order making it the official policy of the United States government that there are only two genders, male and female. also signed an executive order to ban men from playing in women's sports. Ago, Peyton McNabb was an all-star high school athlete, one of the best, preparing for a future in college sports. But when her girls' volleyball match was invaded by a male, he smashed the ball so hard in Peyton's face, causing traumatic brain injury, partially paralyzing her right side and ending her athletic career. It was a shot like she's never seen before. She's never seen anything like it. Peyton is here tonight in the gallery, and Peyton, from now on, schools will kick the men off the girls' team or they will lose all federal funding. And if you really want to see numbers, just take a look at what happened in the women's boxing, weightlifting, track and field, swimming, or cycling, where a male recently finished a long-distance race 5 hours and 14 minutes ahead of a woman for a new record by 5 hours. Broke the record by 5 hours. It's demeaning for women, and it's very bad for our country. We're not going to put up with it any longer. What I have just described is only a small fraction of the common sense revolution that is now, because of us, sweeping the entire world. Common sense has become a common theme, and we will never go back. Never. Never going to let that happen. Among my very highest priorities is to rescue our economy and get dramatic and immediate relief to working families. As you know, we inherited from the last administration an economic catastrophe and an inflation nightmare. Their policies drove up energy prices, pushed up grocery costs, and drove the necessities of life out of reach for millions and millions of Americans. They've never had anything like it. We suffered the worst inflation in 48 years, but perhaps even in the history of our country, they're not sure. As president, I'm fighting every day to reverse this damage and make America affordable again. Joe Biden especially let the price of eggs get out of control. The egg price is out of control, and we're working hard to get it back down. Secretary, do a good job on that. You inherited a total mess from the previous administration. Do a good job. A major focus of our fight to defeat inflation is rapidly reducing the cost of energy. The previous administration cut the number of new oil and gas leases by 95%, slowed pipeline construction to a halt, and closed more than 100 power plants. We are opening up many of those power plants right now. And frankly, we have never seen anything like it. That's why on my first day in office, I declared a national energy emergency. As you've heard me say many times, we have more liquid gold under our feet than any nation on earth, and by far. And now I fully authorized the most talented team ever assembled to go and get it. It's called Drill Baby Drill. My administration is also working on a gigantic natural gas pipeline in Alaska, among the largest in the world, where Japan, South Korea, and other nations want to be our partner with investments of trillions of dollars each. There's never been anything like that one. It will be truly spectacular. It's all set to go. The permitting is gotten. And later this week, I will also take historic action to dramatically expand production of critical minerals and rare earths here in the USA. To further combat inflation, we will not only be reducing the cost of energy, but we'll be ending the flagrant waste of taxpayer dollars. And to that end, I have created the brand new Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE. Perhaps you've heard of it. Perhaps. Which is headed by Elon Musk, who is in the gallery tonight. Thank you, Elon. He's working very hard. He didn't need this. He didn't need this. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. Everybody here, even this side, appreciates it, I believe. They just don't want to admit that. Just listen to some of the appalling waste we have already identified. $22 billion from HHS to provide free housing and cars for illegal aliens. $45 million for diversity, equity, and inclusion scholarships in Burma. $40 million to improve the social and economic inclusion of sedentary migrants. Nobody knows what that is. $8 million to promote LGBTQI+ in the African nation of Lesotho, which nobody has ever heard of. $60 million for indigenous peoples and Afro-Colombian empowerment in Central America. $60 million. $8 million for making mice transgender. This is real. $32 million for a left-wing propaganda operation in Moldova. $10 million for male circumcision in Mozambique. $20 million for the Arab Sesame Street in the Middle East. It's a program. $20 million for a program. $1.9 billion to recently created Decarbonization of Homes Committee, headed up, and we know she's involved. Just at the last moment, the money was passed over by a woman named Stacey Abrams. Have you ever heard of her? A $3.5 million consulting contract for lavish fish monitoring. $1.5 million for voter confidence in Liberia. $14 million for social cohesion in Mali. $59 million for illegal alien hotel rooms in New York City. He's a real estate developer. He's done very well. $250,000 to increase vegan local climate action innovation in Zambia. $42 million for social and behavior change in Uganda. $14 million for improving public procurement in Serbia. $47 million for improving learning outcomes in Asia. Asia's doing very well with learning. You know what we're doing. We should use it ourselves. And $101 million for DEI contracts at the Department of Education, the most ever paid, nothing even like it. Under the Trump administration, all of these scams, and they're far worse, but I didn't think it was appropriate to talk about them. They're so bad. Many more have been found out and exposed and swiftly terminated by a group of very intelligent, mostly young people, headed up by Elon, and we appreciate it. We found hundreds of billions of dollars of fraud. And we've taken back the money and reduced our debt to fight inflation and other things. Taking back a lot of that money. We got it just in time. This is just the beginning. The Government Accountability Office, a federal government office, has estimated annual fraud of over $500 billion in our nation. And we are working very hard to stop it. We're going to. We're also identifying shocking levels of incompetence and probable fraud in the Social Security program for our seniors, and that our seniors and people that we love rely on. Believe it or not, government databases list 4.7 million Social Security members from people aged 100 to 109 years old. It lists 3.6 million people from ages 110 to 119. I don't know any of them. I know some people that are rather elderly, but not quite that elderly. 3.47 million people from ages 120 to 129. 3.9 million people from ages 130 to 139. 3.5 million people from ages 140 to 149. And money is being paid to many of them. And we're searching right now. In fact, Pam, good luck. Good luck. You're going to find it. But a lot of money is paid out to people because it just keeps getting paid and paid and nobody does. And it really hurts Social Security and hurts our country. 1.3 million people from ages 150 to 159 and over 130,000 people, according to the Social Security databases, are age over 160 years old. We have a healthier country than I thought, Bobby. Including, to finish, 1,039 people between the ages of 220 and 229, one person between the age of 240 and 249, and one person is listed at 360 years of age. More than 100 years. More than 100 years older than our country. But we're going to find out where that money's going. And it's not going to be pretty. By slashing all of the fraud, waste, and theft we can find, we will defeat inflation, bring down mortgage rates, lower car payments and grocery prices, protect our seniors, and put more money in the pockets of American families. And today, interest rates took a beautiful drop, big, beautiful drop. It's about time. And in the near future, I want to do what has not been done in 24 years, balance the federal budget. We're going to balance it. With that goal in mind, we have developed in great detail what we are calling the Gold Card, which goes on sale very, very soon. For $5 million, we will allow the most successful job-creating people from all over the world to buy a path to U.S. citizenship. It's like the green card, but better and more sophisticated. And these people will have to pay tax in our country. They won't have to pay tax from where they came. The money that they've made, you wouldn't want to do that, but they have to pay tax, create jobs. They'll also be taking people out of colleges and paying for them so that we can keep them in our country instead of having them be being forced out. Number one, at the top school, as an example, being forced out and not being allowed to stay and create tremendous numbers of jobs and great success for a company out there. So while we take out the criminals, killers, traffickers, and child predators who are allowed to enter our country under the open border policy of these people, the Democrats, the Biden administration, the open border insane policies that you've allowed to destroy our country, we will now bring in brilliant, hardworking, job-creating people. They're going to pay a lot of money, and we're going to reduce our debt with that money. Americans have given us a mandate for bold and profound change. For nearly 100 years, the federal bureaucracy has grown until it has crushed our freedoms, ballooned our deficits, and held back America's potential in every possible way. The nation founded by pioneers and risk takers now drowns under millions and millions of pages of regulations and debt. Approvals that should take 10 days to get instead take 10 years, 15 years, and even 20 years before you're rejected. Meanwhile, we have hundreds of thousands of federal workers who have not been showing up to work. My administration will reclaim power from this unaccountable bureaucracy, and we will restore true democracy to America again. Federal bureaucrat who resists this change will be removed from office immediately. Because we are draining the swamp. It's very simple. And the days of rule by unelected bureaucrats are over. And the next phase of our plan to deliver the greatest economy in history is for this Congress to pass tax cuts for everybody. They're in there. They're waiting for you to vote. And I'm sure that the people on my right, I don't mean the Republican right, but my right here, I'm sure you're going to vote for those tax cuts, because otherwise I don't believe the people will ever vote you into office. So I'm doing you a big favor by telling you that. But I know this group is going to be voting for the tax. Thank you. It's a very, very big part of our plan. We had tremendous success in our first term with it, a very big part of our plan. We're seeking permanent income tax cuts all across the board, and to get urgently needed relief to Americans hit especially hard by inflation. I'm calling for no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and no tax on Social Security benefits for our great seniors. And I also want to make interest payments on car loans tax deductible, but only if the car is made in America. And by the way, we're going to have growth in the auto industry like nobody's ever seen. Plants are opening up all over the place. Deals are being made. Never seen. That's a combination of the election win and tariffs. It's a beautiful word, isn't it? That, along with our other policies, will allow our auto industry to absolutely boom. It's going to boom. Spoke to the majors today, all three, the top people, and they're so excited. In fact, already numerous car companies have announced that they will be building massive automobile plants in America, with Honda just announcing a new plant in Indiana, one of the largest anywhere in the world. And this has taken place since our great victory on November 5th, a date which will hopefully go down as one of the most important in the history of our country. In addition, as part of our tax cuts, we want to cut taxes on domestic production and all manufacturing. And just as we did before, we will provide 100% expensing. It will be retroactive to January 20th, 2025, and it was one of the main reasons why our tax cuts were so successful in our first term, giving us the most successful economy in the history of our country. First term. We had a great first term. If you don't make your product in America, however, under the Trump administration, you will pay a tariff, and in some cases, a rather large one. Other countries have used tariffs against us for decades, and now it's our turn to start using them against those other countries. On average, the European Union, China, Brazil, India, Mexico, and Canada, have you heard of them? And countless other nations charge us tremendously higher tariffs than we charge them. It's very unfair. India charges us auto tariffs higher than 100%. China's average tariff on our products is twice what we charge them. And South Korea's average tariff is four times higher. Think of that, four times higher. And we give so much help militarily and in so many other ways to South Korea. But that's what happens. This is happening by friend and foe. This system is not fair to the United States and never was. And so on April 2nd, I wanted to make it April 1st, but I didn't want to be accused of April Fool's Day. Just one day cost us a lot of money. But we're going to do it in April. I'm a very superstitious person. April 2nd, reciprocal tariffs kick in. And whatever they tariff us, other countries, we will tariff them. That's reciprocal, back and forth. Whatever they tax us, we will tax them. If they do non-monetary tariffs to keep us out of their market, then we will do non-monetary barriers to keep them out of our market. There's a lot of that, too. They don't even allow us in their market. We will take in trillions and trillions of dollars and create jobs like we have never seen before. I did it with China and I did it with others, and the Biden administration couldn't do anything about it because there was so much money they couldn't do anything about it. We have been ripped off for decades by nearly every country on earth, and we will not let that happen any longer. Much has been said over the last 3 months about Mexico and Canada, but we have very large deficits with both of them. But even more importantly, they've allowed fentanyl to come into our country at levels never seen before, killing hundreds of thousands of our citizens and many, very young, beautiful people, destroying families. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. They are, in effect, receiving subsidies of hundreds of billions of dollars. We pay subsidies to Canada and to Mexico of hundreds of billions of dollars, and the United States will not be doing that any longer. We're not going to do it any longer. to our America First policies we're putting into place, we have had $1.7 trillion of new investment in America in just the past few weeks. The combination of the election and our economic policies that people of SoftBank, one of the most brilliant anywhere in the world, announced a $200 billion investment. OpenAI and Oracle, Larry Ellison, announced $500 billion investment, which they wouldn't have done if Kamala had won. Apple announced $500 billion investment. Tim Cook called me. He said, I cannot spend it fast enough. It's going to be much higher than that, I believe. They'll be building their plants here instead of in China. And just yesterday, Taiwan Semiconductor, the biggest in the world, most powerful in the world, has a tremendous amount, 97% of the market, announced a $165 billion investment to build the most powerful chips on Earth right here in the USA. And we're not giving them any money. Your CHIPS Act is a horrible, horrible thing. We give hundreds of billions of dollars, and it doesn't mean a thing. They take our money and they don't spend it. All that meant to them, we're giving them no money. All that was important to them was they didn't want to pay the tariffs, so they came and they're building, and many other companies are coming. We don't have to give them money. We just want to protect our businesses and our people. And they will come because they won't have to pay tariffs if they build in America. So it's very amazing. You should get rid of the CHIP Act and whatever's left over, Mr. Speaker. You should use it to reduce debt or any other reason you want to. Our new trade policy will also be great for the American farmer. I love the farmer. Yeah. Who will now be selling into our home market, the USA, because nobody is going to be able to compete with you. Because those goods that come in from other countries and companies, they're really in a bad position in so many different ways. They're uninspected. They may be very dirty and disgusting, and they come in and they pour in, and they hurt our American farmers. The tariffs will go on agricultural product coming into America, and our farmers, starting on April 2nd, it may be a little bit of an adjustment period. We had that before when I made the deal with China, $50 billion of purchases, and I said, just bear with me, and they did. They did probably have to bear with me again, and this will be even better. That was great. The problem with it was that Biden didn't enforce it. He didn't enforce it. $50 billion of purchases, and we were doing great, but Biden did not enforce it, and it hurt our farmers. But our farmers are going to have a field day right now. So to our farmers, have a lot of fun. I love you, too. I love you, too. It's all going to happen. And I have also imposed a 25% tariff on foreign aluminum, copper, lumber, and steel, because if we don't have, as an example, steel and lots of other things, we don't have a military and, frankly, won't have a country very long. Here today is a proud American steelworker, fantastic person from Decatur, Alabama, Jeff Denard. Has been working at the same steel plant for 27 years in a job that has allowed him to serve as the captain of his local volunteer fire department, raise 7 children with his beautiful wife, Nicole, and over the years provide a loving home for more than 40 foster children. So great, Jeff. Thank you, Jeff. Stories like Jeff's remind us that tariffs are not just about protecting American jobs. They're about protecting the soul of our country. Tariffs are about making America rich again and making America great again. And it's happening, and it will happen rather quickly. There'll be a little disturbance, but we're okay with that. It won't be much. No, you're not. Oh. And look where Biden took us. Very low, the lowest we've ever been. Jeff, I want to thank you very much. And I also want to recognize another person who has devoted herself to foster care community. She worked so hard on it. A very loving person, our magnificent First Lady of the United States. Melania's work has yielded incredible results, helping prepare our nation's future leaders as they enter the workforce. Our First Lady is joined by two impressive young women, very impressive. Haley Ferguson, who benefited from the First Lady's Fostering the Future initiative and is poised to complete her education and become a teacher. And Elliston Berry, who became a victim of an illicit deepfake image produced by a peer. With Elliston's help, the Senate just passed the Take It Down Act. And this is so important. Thank you very much, John. John Thune, thank you. Stand up, John. Thank you, John. Thank you all very much. Thank you. And thank you to John Thune and the Senate. Great job. To criminalize the publication of such images online is a terrible, terrible thing. And once it passes the House, I look forward to signing that bill into law. Thank you. And I'm going to use that bill for myself, too, if you don't mind. Because nobody gets treated worse than I do online. Nobody. That's great. Thank you very much to the Senate. Thank you. But if we truly care about protecting Americans' children, no step is more crucial than securing America's borders. Over the past 4 years, 21 million people poured into the United States. Many of them were murderers, human traffickers, gang members, and other criminals from the streets of dangerous cities all throughout the world. Because of Joe Biden's insane and very dangerous open border policies, they are now strongly embedded in our country, but we are getting them out and getting them out fast. And I want to thank Tom Homan and Christy. I want to thank you and Paul of Border Patrol. I want to thank you. What a job they've all done. Everybody, Border Patrol, ICE, law enforcement in general is incredible. We have to take care of our law enforcement. Have to. A brilliant 22-year-old nursing student named Lakin Riley, the best in her class, admired by everybody, went out for a jog on the campus of the University of Georgia. That morning, Lakin was viciously attacked, assaulted, beaten, brutalized, and horrifically murdered. Lakin was stolen from us by a savage illegal alien gang member who was arrested while trespassing across Biden's open southern border, and then set loose into the United States under the heartless policies of that failed administration. It was indeed a failed administration. He had then been arrested and released in a Democrat-run sanctuary city, a disaster, before ending the life of this beautiful young angel. With us this evening are Lakin's beloved mother, Allison, and her sister, Lauren. Last year, I told Laken's grieving parents that we would ensure their daughter would not have died in vain. That's why the very first bill I signed into law as your 47th president mandates the detention of all dangerous criminal aliens who threaten public safety. It's a very strong, powerful act. It's called the Laken-Riley Act. So Allison and Lauren, America will never, ever forget our beautiful Laken Hope Riley. Thank you very much. Since taking office, my administration has launched the most sweeping border and immigration crackdown in American history, and we quickly achieved the lowest numbers of illegal border crossers ever recorded. Thank you. The media and our friends in the Democrat Party kept saying we needed new legislation. We must have legislation to secure the border. But it turned out that all we really needed was a new president. Joe Biden didn't just open our borders. He flew illegal aliens over them to overwhelm our schools, hospitals, and communities throughout the country. Entire towns like Aurora, Colorado, and Springfield, Ohio, buckled under the weight of the migrant occupation and corruption like nobody's ever seen before. Beautiful towns destroyed. Now, just as I promised in my inaugural address, we are achieving the great liberation of America. But there still is much work to be done. Here tonight is a woman I have gotten to know, Alexis Nungeri from Houston. Wonderful woman. Last June, Alexis's 12-year-old daughter, her precious Jocelyn, walked to a nearby convenience store. She was kidnapped, tied up, assaulted for 2 hours under a bridge, and horrifically murdered. Arrested and charged with this heinous crime are two illegal alien monsters from Venezuela, released into America by the last administration through their ridiculous open border. The death of this beautiful 12-year-old girl and the agony of her mother and family touched our entire nation greatly. Alexis, I promised that we would always remember your daughter, your magnificent daughter, and earlier tonight, I signed an order keeping my word to you. One thing I have learned about Jocelyn is that she loved animals so much. She loved nature. Across Galveston Bay from where Jocelyn lived in Houston, you will find a magnificent national wildlife refuge, a pristine, peaceful, 34,000-acre sanctuary for all of God's creatures on the edge of the Gulf of America. Alexis, moments ago, I formally renamed that refuge in loving memory of your beautiful daughter, Jocelyn. So, Mr. Vice President, if you would, may I have the order? Thank you very much. All three savages charged with Jocelyn and Lakin's murders were members of the Venezuelan prison gang, the toughest gang, they say, in the world, known as Tren de Aragua. 2 weeks ago, I officially designated this gang, along with MS-13 and the bloodthirsty Mexican drug cartels, as foreign terrorist organizations. They are now officially in the same category as ISIS, and that's not good for them. Countless thousands of these terrorists were welcomed into the U.S. by the Biden administration. But now every last one will be rounded up and forcibly removed from our country, or, if they're too dangerous, put in jails, standing trial in this country, because we don't want them to come back ever. With us this evening is a warrior on the front lines of that battle, Border Patrol Agent Roberto Ortiz. Great guy. In January, Roberto and another agent were patrolling by the Rio Grande near an area known as Cartel Island. Doesn't sound too nice to me. When heavily armed gunmen started shooting at them, Roberto saw that his partner was totally exposed, at great danger, and he leapt into action, returning fire and providing crucial seconds for his fellow agent to seek safety, just barely. I have some of the prints of that event, and it was not good. Agent Ortiz, we salute you for your great courage and for your line of fire that you took and for the bravery that you showed. We honor you, and we will always honor you. Thank you, Roberto, very much. Thank you, Roberto. And I actually got to know him on my many calls to the border. He's a great, great gentleman. The territory to the immediate south of our border is now dominated entirely by criminal cartels that murder, rape, torture, and exercise total control. They have total control over a whole nation, posing a grave threat to our national security. The cartels are waging war on America, and it's time for America to wage war on the cartels, which we are doing. Five nights ago, Mexican authorities, because of our tariff policies being imposed on them, think of this, handed over to us 29 of the biggest cartel leaders in their country. That has never happened before. They want to make us happy. First time ever. But we need Mexico and Canada to do much more than they've done, and they have to stop the fentanyl and drugs pouring into the USA. They're going to stop it. I have sent Congress a detailed funding request laying out exactly how we will eliminate these threats to protect our homeland and complete the largest deportation operation in American history, larger even than current record holder President Dwight D. Eisenhower, a moderate man, but someone who believed very strongly in borders. Americans expect Congress to send me this funding without delay so I can sign it into law. So, Mr. Speaker, John Thune, both of you, I hope you're going to be able to do that, Mr. Speaker. Thank you. Mr. Leader, thank you. Thank you very much. And let's get it to me. I'll sign it so fast, you won't even believe it. And as we reclaim our sovereignty, we must also bring back law and order to our cities and towns. In recent years, our justice system has been turned upside down by radical left lunatics. Many jurisdictions virtually ceased enforcing the law against dangerous repeat offenders while weaponizing law enforcement against political opponents like me. My administration has acted swiftly and decisively to restore fair, equal, and impartial justice under the constitutional rule of law, starting at the FBI and the DOJ. Pam, good luck. Cash, wherever you may be, good luck. Good luck. Pam Bondi. Good luck. So important. Gonna do a great job. Cash, thank you. Thank you, Cash. They've already started very strong. They're going to do a fantastic job. You're going to be very proud of them. We're also once again giving our police officers the support, protection, and respect they so dearly deserve. They have to get it. They have such a hard, dangerous job, but we're going to make it less dangerous. The problem is the bad guys don't respect the law, but they're starting to respect it, and they soon will respect it. This also includes our great fire departments throughout the country. Our firemen and women are unbelievable people, and we'll never forget them. And besides that, they voted for me in record numbers, so I have no choice. One year ago this month, 31-year-old New York police officer Jonathan Diller, unbelievably wonderful person and a great officer, was gunned down at a traffic stop on Long Island. I went to his funeral. The vicious criminal charged with his murder had 21 prior arrests, and they were rough arrests. He was a real bad one. The thug in the seat next to him had 14 prior arrests and went by the name of Killer. He was Killer. He killed other people, they say, a lot of them. I attended Officer Diller's service, and when I met his wife and one-year-old son, Ryan, it was very inspirational, actually. His widow's name is Stephanie, and she is here tonight. Stephanie, thank you very much, Stephanie. Thank you very much. Stephanie, we're going to make sure that Ryan knows his dad was a true hero, New York's finest, and we're going to get these cold-blooded killers and repeat offenders off our streets, and we're going to do it fast. Got to stop it. They get out with 28 arrests. They push people into subway trains. They hit people over the head, back of the head with baseball bats. We got to get them out of here. I've already signed an executive order requiring a mandatory death penalty for anyone who murders a police officer. And tonight I'm asking Congress to pass that policy into permanent law. I'm also asking for a new crime bill getting tough on repeat offenders while enhancing protections for America's police officers so they can do their jobs without fear of their lives being totally destroyed. They don't want to be killed. Going to let them be killed. Joining us in the gallery tonight is a young man who truly loves our police. His name is DJ Daniel. He is 13 years old, and he has always dreamed of becoming a police officer. But in 2018, DJ was diagnosed with brain cancer. The doctors gave him 5 months at most to live. That was more than 6 years ago. Since that time, DJ and his dad have been on a quest to make his dream come true, and DJ has been sworn in as an honorary law enforcement officer, actually a number of times. The police love him, the police departments love him. And tonight, DJ, we're going to do you the biggest honor of them all. I am asking our new Secret Service Director, Sean Curran, to officially make you an agent of the United States Secret Service. DJ's doctors believe his cancer likely came from a chemical he was exposed to when he was younger. Since 1975, rates of child cancer have increased by more than 40%. Reversing this trend is one of the top priorities for our new presidential commission to make America healthy again, chaired by our new Secretary of Health and Human Services, Robert F. Kennedy, Jr. With the name Kennedy, you would have thought everybody over here would have been cheering. How quickly they forget. Our goal is to get toxins out of our environment, poisons out of our food supply, and keep our children healthy and strong. As an example, not long ago, and you can't even believe these numbers, 1 in 10,000 children had autism, 1 in 10,000. And now it's 1 in 36. There's something wrong. 1 in 36. Think of that. So we're going to find out what it is, and there's nobody better than Bobby and all of the people that are working with you. You have the best to figure out what is going on. Okay, Bobby, good luck. It's a very important job. Thank you. My administration is also working to protect our children from toxic ideologies in our schools. A few years ago, January, Little John and her husband discovered that their daughter's school had secretly socially transitioned their 13-year-old little girl. Teachers and administrators conspired to deceive January and her husband while encouraging her daughter to use a new name and pronouns. They-them pronoun, actually, all without telling January, who is here tonight and is now a courageous advocate against this form of child abuse. January, thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Stories like this are why, shortly after taking office, I signed an executive order banning public schools from indoctrinating our children with transgender ideology. also signed an order to cut off all taxpayer funding to any institution that engages in the sexual mutilation of our youth. And now I want Congress to pass a bill permanently banning and criminalizing sex changes on children and forever ending the lie that any child is trapped in the wrong body. This is a big lie. And our message to every child in America is that you are perfect exactly the way God made you. Because we're getting wokeness out of our schools and out of our military, and it's already out, and it's out of our society. We don't want it. Wokeness is trouble. Wokeness is bad. It's gone. It's gone. And we feel so much better for it, don't we? Don't we feel better? Our service members won't be activists and ideologues, they will be fighters and warriors. They will fight for our country. And Pete, congratulations. Secretary of Defense, congratulations. And he's not big into the woke movement, I can tell you. I know him well. I am pleased to report that in January, the U.S. Army had its single best recruiting month in 15 years, and that all armed services are having among the best recruiting results ever in the history of our services. What a difference. And you know, it was just a few months ago where the results were exactly the opposite. We couldn't recruit anywhere. We couldn't recruit. Now we're having the best results just about that we've ever had. What a tremendous turnaround. It's really a beautiful thing to see. People love our country again. It's very simple. They love our country, and they love being in our military again. So it's a great thing, and thank you very much. Great job. We're joined tonight by a young man, Jason Hartley, who knows the weight of that call of duty. Jason's father, grandfather, and great-grandfather all wore the uniform. Jason tragically lost his dad, who was also a Los Angeles County Sheriff's deputy when he was just a boy, and now he wants to carry on the family legacy of service. Jason is a senior in high school, a six-letter varsity athlete, a really good athlete, they say, a brilliant student with a 4.46, that's good, GPA. And his greatest dream is to attend the U.S. Military Academy at West Point. And Jason, that's a very big deal getting in. That's a hard one to get into. But I'm pleased to inform you that your application has been accepted. You will soon be joining the Corps of Cadets. Thank you. Jason, you're going to be on the long gray line, Jason. As Commander-in-Chief, my focus is on building the most powerful military of the future. As a first step, I'm asking Congress to fund a state-of-the-art Golden Dome missile defense shield to protect our homeland, all made in the USA. Ronald Reagan wanted to do it long ago, but the technology just wasn't there, not even close. But now we have the technology. It's incredible, actually. And other places, they have it. Israel has it. Other places have it. And the United States should have it, too. Right, Tim? Right? They should have it, too. So I want to thank you. But it's a very, very important. This is a very dangerous world. We should have it. We want to be protected, and we're going to protect our citizens like never before. To boost our defense industrial base, we are also going to resurrect the American shipbuilding industry, including commercial shipbuilding and military shipbuilding. And for that purpose, I am announcing tonight that we will create a new Office of Shipbuilding in the White House and offer special tax incentives to bring this industry home to America, where it belongs. We used to make so many ships. We don't make them anymore very much, but we're going to make them very fast, very soon. It will have a huge impact. To further enhance our national security, my administration will be reclaiming the Panama Canal, and we've already started doing it. Just today, a large American company announced they are buying both ports around the Panama Canal and lots of other things having to do with the Panama Canal and a couple of other canals. The Panama Canal was built by Americans for Americans, not for others, but others could use it. But it was built at tremendous cost of American blood and treasure. 38,000 workers died building the Panama Canal. They died of malaria. They died of snake bites and mosquitoes. Not a nice place to work. They paid them very highly to go there, knowing there was a 25% chance that they would die. The most expensive project also that was ever built in our country's history, if you bring it up to modern-day costs. It was given away by the Carter administration for $1. But that agreement has been violated very severely. We didn't give it to China. We gave it to Panama, and we're taking it back. Yeah. And we have Marco Rubio in charge. Good luck, Marco. Now, we know who to blame if anything goes wrong. Marco's been amazing, and he's going to do a great job. Think of it. He got 100 votes. You know, he was approved with actually 99, but the 100th was this gentleman, and I feel very certain. So let's assume he got 100 votes. And I'm either very, very happy about that, or I'm very concerned about it. But he's already proven. I mean, he's a great gentleman. He's respected by everybody, and we appreciate you voting for Marco. He's going to do a fantastic job. Thank you. Thank you. He's doing a great job. Great job. And I also have a message tonight for the incredible people of Greenland. We strongly support your right to determine your own future. And if you choose, we welcome you into the United States of America. We need Greenland for national security and even international security, and we're working with everybody involved to try and get it. But we need it, really, for international world security. And I think we're going to get it. One way or the other, we're going to get it. We will keep you safe. We will make you rich, and together we will take Greenland to heights like you have never thought possible before. It's a very small population, but very, very large piece of land and very, very important for military security. America is once again standing strong against the forces of radical Islamic terrorism. 3.5 years ago, ISIS terrorists killed 13 American service members and countless others in the Abbey Gate bombing during the disastrous and incompetent withdrawal from Afghanistan. Not that they were withdrawing. It was the way they withdrew. Perhaps the most embarrassing moment in the history of our country. Tonight, I am pleased to announce that we have just apprehended the top terrorist responsible for that atrocity, and he is right now on his way here to face the swift sword of American justice. And I want to thank especially the government of Pakistan for helping arrest this monster. This was a very momentous day for those 13 families who I actually got to know very well, most of them, whose children were murdered, and the many people that were so badly, over 42 people, so badly injured on that fateful day in Afghanistan. What a horrible day. Such incompetence was shown. That when Putin saw what happened, I guess he said, wow, maybe this is my chance. That's how bad it was. Should have never happened. Grossly incompetent people. I spoke to many of the parents and loved ones, and they're all in our hearts tonight. Just spoke to them on the phone. We had a big call. Every one of them called, and everybody was on the line, and they did nothing but cry with happiness. They were very happy, as happy as you can be under those circumstances. Their child, brother, sister, son, daughter, was killed for no reason whatsoever. In the Middle East, we're bringing back our hostages from Gaza. In my first term, we achieved one of the most groundbreaking peace agreements in generations, the Abraham Accords. And now we're going to build on that foundation to create a more peaceful and prosperous future for the entire region. A lot of things are happening in the Middle East. People have been talking about that so much lately with everything going on with Ukraine and Russia. But a lot of things are happening in the Middle East. It's a rough neighborhood, actually. I'm also working tirelessly to end the savage conflict in Ukraine. Millions of Ukrainians and Russians have been needlessly killed or wounded in this horrific and brutal conflict with no end in sight. The United States has sent hundreds of billions of dollars to support Ukraine's defense with no security, with no anything. Do you want to keep it going for another 5 years? Yeah, you would say Pocahontas says yes. <laughs> 2,000 people are being killed every single week. More than that. They're Russian young people. They're Ukrainian young people. They're not Americans. But I want it to stop. Meanwhile, Europe has sadly spent more money buying Russian oil and gas than they have spent on defending Ukraine, by far. Think of that. They've spent more buying Russian oil and gas than they have defending. And we've spent perhaps $350 billion, like taking candy from a baby. That's what happened. And they've spent $100 billion. What a difference that is. And we have an ocean separating us, and they don't. But we're getting along very well with them, and lots of good things are happening. Biden has authorized more money in this fight than Europe has spent by billions and billions of dollars. It's hard to believe that they wouldn't have stopped it and said at some point, come on, let's equalize. You got to be equal to us. But that didn't happen. Earlier today, I received an important letter from President Zelensky of Ukraine. The letter reads, Ukraine is ready to come to the negotiating table as soon as possible to bring lasting peace closer. Nobody wants peace more than the Ukrainians, he said. My team and I stand ready to work under President Trump's strong leadership to get a peace that lasts. We do really value how much America has done to help Ukraine maintain its sovereignty and independence. Regarding the agreement on minerals and security, Ukraine is ready to sign it at any time that is convenient for you. I appreciate that he sent this letter, just got it a little while ago. Simultaneously, we've had serious discussions with Russia and have received strong signals that they are ready for peace. Wouldn't that be beautiful? Wouldn't that be beautiful? Wouldn't that be beautiful? It's time to stop this madness. It's time to halt the killing. It's time to end this senseless war. If you want to end wars, you have to talk to both sides. Nearly 4 years ago, amid rising tensions, a history teacher named Mark Fogel was detained in Russia and sentenced to 14 years in a penal colony. Rough stuff. The previous administration barely lifted a finger to help him. They knew he was innocent, but they had no idea where to begin. But last summer, I promised his 95-year-old mother, Malfine, that we would bring her boy safely back home. After 22 days in office, I did just that, and they are here tonight. To Mark and his great mom, we are delighted to have you safe and sound and with us. As fate would have it, Mark Fogel was born in a small rural town in Butler, Pennsylvania. Have you heard of it? Where his mother has lived for the past 78 years. I just happened to go there last July 13th for a rally. That was not pleasant. And that is where I met his beautiful mom right before I walked onto that stage. And I told her I would not forget what she said about her son. And I never did I? Never forgot. Less than 10 minutes later, at that same rally, gunfire rang out and a sick and deranged assassin unloaded 8 bullets from his sniper's perch into a crowd of many thousands of people. My life was saved by a fraction of an inch, but some were not so lucky. Corey Comparator was a firefighter, a veteran, a Christian, a husband, a devoted father, and above all, a protector. When the sound of gunshots pierced the air, it was a horrible sound. Corey knew instantly what it was and what to do. He threw himself on top of his wife and daughters and shielded them from the bullets with his own body. Corey was hit really hard. You know the story from there. He sacrificed his life to save theirs. Two others, very fine people, were also seriously hit. But thankfully, with the help of two great country doctors, we thought they were gone and they were saved. So those doctors had great talent. We're joined by Corey's wife, Helen, who was his high school sweetheart, and their two beloved daughters, Allison and Kaylee. Thank you. To Helen, Allison, and Kaylee, Corey is looking down on his three beautiful ladies right now, and he is cheering you on. He loves you. He is cheering you on. Corey was taken from us much too soon, but his destiny was to leave us all with a shining example of the selfless devotion of a true American patriot. It was love like Corey's that built our country, and it's love like Corey's that is going to make our country more majestic than ever before. I believe that my life was saved that day in Butler for a very good reason. I was saved by God to make America great again. I believe that. Thank you very much. From the patriots of Lexington and Concord to the heroes of Gettysburg and Normandy, from the warriors who crossed the Delaware to the trailblazers who climbed the Rockies, and from the legends who soared at Kitty Hawk to the astronauts who touched the moon, Americans have always been the people who defied all odds, transcended all dangers, made the most extraordinary sacrifices, and did whatever it took to defend our children, our country, and our freedom. And as we have seen in this chamber tonight, that same strength, faith, love, and spirit is still alive and thriving in the hearts of the American people. Despite the best efforts of those who would try to censor us, silence us, break us, destroy us, Americans are today a proud, free, sovereign, and independent nation that will always be free, and we will fight for it till death. We will never let anything happen to our beloved country, because we are a country of doers, dreamers, fighters, and survivors. Our ancestors crossed a vast ocean, strode into the unknown wilderness, and carved their fortunes from the rock and soil of a perilous and very dangerous frontier. They chased our destiny across a boundless continent. They built the railroads, laid the highways, and graced the world with American marvels like the Empire State Building, the mighty Hoover Dam, and the towering Golden Gate Bridge. They lit the world with electricity, broke free of the force of gravity, fired up the engines of American industry, vanquished the communists, fascists, and Marxists all over the world, and gave us countless modern wonders sculpted out of iron, glass, and steel. We stand on the shoulders of these pioneers who won and built the modern age, these workers who poured their sweat into the skylines of our cities, these warriors who shed their blood on fields of battle and gave everything they had for our rights and for our freedom. Now it is our time to take up the righteous cause of American liberty. And it is our turn to take America's destiny into our own hands and begin the most thrilling days in the history of our country. This will be our greatest era. With God's help, over the next 4 years, we are going to lead this nation even higher. And we are going to forge the freest, most advanced, most dynamic, and most dominant civilization ever to exist on the face of this earth. We are going to create the highest quality of life, build the safest and wealthiest and healthiest and most vital communities anywhere in the world. We are going to conquer the vast frontiers of science, and we are going to lead humanity into space and plant the American flag on the planet Mars and even far beyond. Through it all, we are going to rediscover the unstoppable power of the American spirit, and we are going to renew unlimited promise of the American dream. Every single day, we will stand up and we will fight, fight, fight for the country our citizens believe in and for the country our people deserve. My fellow Americans, get ready for an incredible future, because the golden age of America has only just begun. It will be like nothing that has ever been seen before. Thank you, God bless you, and God bless America.
And that was U.S. President Donald Trump there addressing a joint session of Congress, his first since he began his second term in office more than a month ago. While in a wide-ranging speech themed the renewal of the American dream, Mr. Trump said it's been a swift and unrelenting first 6 years, 6 weeks rather, in office to usher what he said at his inauguration would be the golden age of America. He said he has accomplished more in the last 6 weeks than the past 4 to 8 years, and declared that America's spirit, pride and confidence are back.
And the American dream is surging bigger and better than ever before. The American dream is unstoppable, and our country is on the verge of a comeback, the likes of which the world has never witnessed and perhaps will never witness again.
Members are directed to uphold and maintain decorum in the House and to cease any further disruptions. That's your warning.
It was a dramatic start to the session. It was interrupted by protests, which led Speaker of the House, Mike Johnson, to call for the removal of a lawmaker. Now, President Trump continued by speaking extensively about his crackdown on illegal immigration and fighting crime. Well, he also highlighted efforts to reduce energy cost, saying he'll take action this week to dramatically expand the production of critical minerals and rare earths in the U.S. Mr. Trump also spoke about what he deemed unfair trade practices by others, justifying tariffs that's already triggered a trade war with China, Canada, and Mexico.
April 2nd, reciprocal tariffs kick in. And whatever they tariff us, other countries, we will tariff them. That's reciprocal, back and forth. Whatever they tax us, we will tax them. If they do non-monetary tariffs to keep us out of their market, then we will do non-monetary barriers to keep them out of our market. There's a lot of that, too. They don't even allow us in their market. We will take in trillions and trillions of dollars and create jobs like we have never seen before.
Well, Mr. Trump touched on bolstering the country's defenses, including building what he called a golden missile dome over in America. Well, he said the U.S. was reclaiming the Panama Canal, again alleging it had fallen under Chinese control. Mr. Trump also spoke about the war in Ukraine, reiterating his call to end it quickly. He again took aim at Europe for failing to play a bigger role to help Kyiv. President Trump revealed he's received a letter from Ukrainian leader Volodymyr Zelensky days after both engaged in a blowout in the Oval Office.
The letter reads, Ukraine is ready to come to the negotiating table as soon as possible to bring lasting peace closer. Nobody wants peace more than the Ukrainians, he said. My team and I stand ready to work under President Trump's strong leadership.
Well, you know, let's go to Nick Harper, who's standing by and watching developments in Washington, D.C. Well, Nick, President Trump speaking to a clearly divided Congress there, Republicans standing and applauding, the Democrats booing and jeering and really, you know, holding up protest signs as well. One Democratic representative hauled out of the chamber. Mr. Trump says that there's nothing he can do or say to win over Democrats. What does this say about what we saw about politics in America?
Well, I think in a word, divided. I mean, we saw that very clearly, a visual representation with half the room, the Republican half, standing up, cheering almost every single line of Donald Trump's speech. The Democrats remaining in their seats, poker-faced throughout. And I think Donald Trump played on that division. At times it felt like a campaign speech. The number of times that he referenced his predecessor, Joe Biden, really as being the root of all the problems in America. I mean, it's not normal for this type of address to a joint session of Congress to speak so much about the past. It's more often forward-looking about things that he's hoping to achieve. And yes, we saw that protest. Democrats throughout the course of that incredibly long speech left in droves. Some of them held up signs. One said simply false. Another one said Musk steals. Another one said save Medicaid. And then we saw that protest very early on in the speech from Al Green, a 78-year-old Democrat from Texas. He stood up and was saying you don't have a mandate while waving his cane in the air. The House Speaker Mike Johnson told him to sit down, to be quiet. He didn't. He was then escorted out. He said afterwards to reporters that it was worth it to let people to know that there are some people who are going to stand up to the president. But it's not clear if he'll face any formal punishment. But it was certainly a moment very early on in the speech showing that Democrat resistance, that pushing back against the president and some of the claims that he was making.
You know, President Trump called out India, China and South Korea on tariffs. And he promised his one-for-one reciprocal tariffs would take effect on April 2nd. But he admits that the levies will cause a little disturbance, but it won't be much. How are we expecting, you know, these tariffs to go over with U.S. partners and Americans who are already upset about the high cost of living?
Yeah, well, for Americans, I mean, it's an incredibly hard sell for the president. Remember, he campaigned, really, as his main campaign promise, to bring down the cost of living, to reduce inflation. And yet, at the same time, here we are seeing him restart that trade war with other countries. And the worry is that that will bring up the cost of living for many Americans. So there is that concern. And this is what he had to say, referencing those three Asian countries, and particularly the tariffs that he feel are causing a very big impact.
Countless other nations charge us tremendously higher tariffs than we charge them. It's very unfair. India charges us auto tariffs higher than 100%. China's average tariff on our products is twice what we charge them. And South Korea's average tariff is 4 times higher. Think of that, 4 times higher. And we give so much help militarily and in so many other ways to South Korea, but that's what happens.
I mean, I think it has to be said, he spent more time speaking about tariffs and tariffing other countries than he did giving specific details on how he would reduce the cost of living at the moment. And he reiterated that pledge to bring in reciprocal tariffs on April the 2nd. That will be against a whole host of countries and come in a way that tries to replicate the tariffs that they have in place against the United States.
Well, you know, Nick, we also saw several times Elon Musk being mentioned during Mr. Trump's speech there, quite a few times during the speech. And perhaps you could let us know, what does this tell us about the amount of influence that Elon Musk now has in the White House?
Yeah, referenced several times. The cameras panned to him. He was up in the public gallery, not an elected official, so he wasn't down on the floor of the chamber. Was wearing a suit and tie rather than his black MAGA baseball cap. But I think it does show that influence, because much of the last 6 weeks, that whirlwind of executive orders that we've seen being signed and the disruption that has been caused centres around the Department of Government Efficiency, DOGE, which Elon Musk heads up. The fact that there have been thousands of workers who have been fired, have been put on administrative leave. We've seen wholesale departments being shut down. The International Development Agency, USAID, effectively being frozen. It shows that influence that Elon Musk wields, the fact that Donald Trump has entrusted him with that. And certainly it is something that Republicans in the room were cheering. It is something that has dismayed Democrats, though, over the last 6 weeks.
Well, you know, you mentioned about how they were jeering in the room itself. What are some of the reactions you're hearing from both Republicans and Democrats to his address, which just ended shortly ago?
Yeah, many of the Democrats astounded by what they heard. They felt that many of the things that Donald Trump referenced was really a laundry list of things that they had heard before. Republicans, though, coming out in support. But I think it's interesting to note, in terms of high-profile Democrats, really no one has spoken out against the president, bearing in mind that throughout the campaign running up to November's election, it was all about Donald Trump being a threat to democracy. Democrats simply haven't put their heads above the parapets to speak in that type of language since Donald Trump re-entered the Oval Office. Now, we are having the Democrats giving a chance to speak. Their rebuttal speech, we'll be hearing from a first-term representative from Michigan, a Senator Elisa Slotkin, and we're told that she's going to offer a bold vision of hope, unity, and a brighter future for everyone, not just the wealthy few at the top. But I think part of it will be that realigned strategy of the Democrats, not to attack Donald Trump and what he stands for, but rather to point out what his policies are doing and how they are affecting the American people. But I think the Democrats as a whole still haven't worked out a strategy going forward, and they'll need to very quickly if they're going to think about how to win seats in the midterms in 2026, and how they're going to try and have a candidate that they think will be able to take on the Republicans in the 2028 presidential election.
Nick, thank you so much for unpacking things for us just hot out of the oven. Nick Harper in Washington, D.C. Well, we also have Clara, who's going to be here telling us about how markets are looking right now. Clara, what do you have for us?
Well, investors are digesting those comments from President Trump, who acknowledged that there would be a little disturbance from the tariff action, but he promised that the rewards would be worth it. U.S. futures are now trading in the green. It follows a sell-off on Wall Street overnight as U.S. tariffs on China, Mexico and Canada took effect and those countries retaliated. All this trade uncertainty is leaving investors worried about the potential shockwaves for the global economy. Let's check on the US dollar index, which is now ticking lower below the flat line. And cautious trade across Asia-Pacific markets as escalating global trade tensions weigh on sentiment. We're seeing a mixed picture in this hour. Japan's Nikkei 225 up more than 0.6%. Korea's Kospi in the green as well, up more than 0.8%. And ASX in the red, down by more than 0.9%. Mr. Trump also lauded Taiwanese chipmaker TSMC's $100 billion U.S. investment plan in his speech. Now, TSMC is now ticking higher by 2%. Investors in the region are also weighing comments from China's top legislature against rising tariff risks on the world's second largest economy. Markets in the Greater China region trading higher as Beijing aims for economic growth of around 5% in 2025 and ramps up spending to counter the effects of U.S. levies. We're seeing a mixed picture in this hour. The Shanghai Composite Index up more than 0.3%. Shenzhen going in the other direction, while the Hang Seng is leading the way in gains up more than 1.6%. And back to you, Ella.
Well, thanks, Clara, for the market updates right there. Now, for further analysis of President Trump's address to the Congress, let's now speak to Luis DiCipio, professor of political science from UC Irvine. He's joining